Wake up, everyone. It's time for a call to action. Welcome to Call to Action Today, where there are no sacred cows, with your host, Steve Noble, just an ordinary man who believes in an extraordinary God, and he's calling you out every week to live the Christian life in your home, your work, and even in politics. Call Steve now at 866-34-TRUTH, or check him out online at c2atoday.org. And now, with some much-needed cough medicine for the church, here's your host, Steve Noble.
Well, we're actually live from Nazareth at the Museum of the Bible. Not that Nazareth. We're at this Nazareth, the Nazareth display in the Museum of the Bible, Washington, D.C., which is opening up on November 17, 2017. It's been, I tell you, I've been to the website. I did the fly-through stuff. I've watched all the videos. I've done interviews with Steve Green and Mark Green, and just been it's kind of investing myself over the last 6 months in the Museum of the Bible. But it's one thing to look at the website. It's another thing to look at images on Google. It is quite another thing, and an overwhelming thing, a shocking thing, a God-sized thing, to walk into this building today. And I've been completely overwhelmed and pretty much almost speechless, which is rare for me, as I've come through the Museum of the Bible and gone through the different floors and the narrative floor, the history floor, the impact floor, to look at this, what's going to be a 140-foot long digital screen that's in the lobby and the most high-tech stuff. I'm sitting here in Nazareth looking at olive trees, recreated olive trees that are created based on thousands and thousands of pictures and even some paper molds of the actual bark on the olive trees. So if you want to look at this, you want to see what it looks like, you can go to Facebook Live. We're doing Facebook Live right now, facebook.com/C2A Radio, or you can go to Facebook.com Museum of the Bible. I think we're probably broadcasting on there as well. But we are live from the Nazareth exhibit here in the Museum of the Bible. And like I said, just mind-boggling. It's going to be just one of the most incredible things that I think God has done in this nation and right here in our capital. Literally, when you're up on the top floors of the Museum of the Bible, you look out over this spectacular, the whole top of the building is like this glass folding over kind of scroll. So you got to go to the website, Museum of the Bible. Go to the Museum of the Bible. You'll begin to see this kind of stuff. And you look out and there's our nation's capital. And just three blocks away is the whole mall in Washington, D.C. This will be the most high-tech, most incredible museum in Washington, D.C. And it's all about the Bible. You've got the narrative floor, all about the story of the Bible. You have the history floor. You know, how did the Bible come through all these years? Here we are 2,000 years later. And then the impact floor. I actually asked Steve Green when I was down in Orlando. Steve Green's the chairman of the board of the Museum of the Bible and president of Hobby Lobby. I asked Steve Green in Orlando a few weeks back, if he had to live in one floor in the Museum of the Bible, which one would it be? And he said, well, actually, we're building some apartments. I said, all right, you can't use that answer. It's got to be one of the other floors. And he said the impact floor. And when you start studying, and just when you see things on the website, when you go to Museum of the Bible's website, museumofthebible.org, and you look at the impact floor, I'm telling you, every person, especially in Western civilization, we are all being touched by the impact of the Bible every day, all over the place. Most of us don't. Fashion, media, culture, and the arts, medicine, schooling, education, music, just writing, literature, all of these things deeply and profoundly impacted by the Bible. Most people don't know that. You think it's just this old document. If you're not a Christian, it's just like this old book that all these wacky people follow, and it doesn't really, it's kind of like a kid's fairy tale book, right? No, wrong. Besides being the truth of God's word and reality itself, it has been the most impactful book in the history of the world. Jesus Christ, of course, the most impactful person to ever walk the planet. All of human history wraps itself around and finds itself in not only the life and ministry of Jesus Christ himself, but the Bible itself. And that's why here at the Bible Museum, just unbelievable content, unbelievable technology to not just kind of walk through it. We're going to talk to Nate Pennington here in a little while, who's the art director with Jonathan Martin Creative. He's been working on this project for coming up on like 3 to 4 years, and not just walking by things, but walking into it, walking into the narrative, walking into, in this case, if you see us here on Facebook Live, facebook.com/C2A Radio, You'll see this whole vista behind me, which is looking out over the Sea of Galilee, basically where Jesus' ministry took place most of the time. And even the rocks and the stones and the olive trees, and there's a little temple in here, and there's an olive mill press. And so, like, the thought of having a millstone tied around your neck. Nate's going to talk to us about that. You go, well, yeah, that's Jesus, you know, getting pretty serious. If you're lead little ones astray, you get a millstone. These millstones are massive and weigh hundreds and hundreds of pounds. So you go, wow, was Jesus serious? Or what? Just an incredible, incredible experience coming here today. And it's like still 7 months away. So there's still, I put some pictures up on Facebook.com today, Facebook.com/C2A Radio. I shared it on the Call to Action Radio page there. And it's drywall, but there's this 500 seat theater. See, I could sit here and gush for the next couple hours, just things coming back to my mind that I've seen here today. And I've never seen anything like it. And the world has never seen anything like the Museum of the Bible and what God is doing here through the Green family and the investment over all these years, not only the collection of biblical antiquities, which is over 40,000 pieces at this point, but the museum itself. We're talking about $1 billion type investment in the kingdom of God. And this isn't just a place for Christians. It's not just a place for those of us that follow the Lord and follow his word. This is the Bible for everybody, to give a hearing to everybody about the narrative of the Bible, the history of the Bible, and the impact of the Bible here at the Bible Museum in Washington, D.C. So when we come back after the first break, we're going to talk to Dr. Tony Zeiss, who's the executive director of the Museum of the Bible, who's also a fellow North Carolinian, excited about that. Then we'll talk to Nate Pennington, who's an art director from Jonathan Martin Creative. And then we'll talk to Dr. Seth Pollinger, who's a friend from Southeastern Baptist Theological Seminary, and he's the assistant director of the actual collection itself. So a lot to get through today, but this is not going to be our last show from the Museum of the Bible. We've been invited earlier to be a part of that broadcast facility, so I'm gonna try to do my best to get up here at least once a quarter and broadcast from here. And we want to bring a couple bus loads of Call to Action folks up here after it opens in November, and we're going to continue to talk about it because God is using this already in an amazing way, and just the interconnectivity between people of God and, you know, there's Jewish scholars and there's Christian scholars and there's Orthodox scholars, all these various people, all a part of this process and what God is doing here at the Museum of the Bible. So we'll look at it from a bunch of different angles here today on Call to Action, and we'll talk to some of the experts and the people that are involved here on the ground. And I'm just going to give you a visitor's perspective. I'm your eyes and I'm your ears today, walking through this incredible, incredible move of God here in our nation's capital. And that was that moment. We're coming up on the break, but that moment when we got up to the top floors and you look out through this beautiful glass curved over like a scroll, and there's the Capitol building, there's our nation's capital. What's more important in our nation's capital than the Word of God? Nothing. And that's why we need to be a part of it. Go to museumofthebible.org. All kinds of ways for you to get involved, for you to be a supporter, for you to get involved and buy your tickets in advance, group tickets, all that stuff. We're going to talk to all these people, Dr. Tony Zeiss, when we come back right after this. Pretty exciting music for a pretty exciting day. This is Steve Noble, Call to Action Radio, live from the Museum of the Bible in Washington, D.C. But don't drive here yet. You can't get in. Although, I mean, by God's grace, I got in today. But opening up, the grand opening, November 17th of this year, right here in our nation's capital. We're like three blocks away from the Capitol itself. And 430,000 square feet, just unbelievable, really unimaginable for me before I got here. And I went to the website. I was at museumofthebible.org. I've gone through all those things. I watched the fly-through video and all that kind of stuff. But when you show up here and you walk in this building and you start to go from floor to floor to floor, you go to the narrative floor and the history floor and the impact floor, and you see where the digital docents are going to be passed out and the courageous pages where the kids area is and the digital lobby ceiling, which is 140 foot long, going to be the highest pixel resolution, anything like that on the planet, the Performing Arts Center, one thing after another. It's just mind-boggling. I really cannot yet get my mind around all that God is doing here, but it's not my job to get my mind around it. It's your job. It's Dr. Tony Zeiss's job. He's the executive director of the Museum of the Bible here in Washington, D.C. And Dr. Zeiss, thanks for being with us today.
Oh, it's my pleasure, Steve. I'm happy to be here.
So this has been quite a fast whirlwind tour for you, right?
You could say that. As a matter of fact, you're right. I served as a consultant in the month of December last year, and then became the executive director on the 3rd of January of this year.
Man, and then, but, you know, I've obviously a long career. I'm a North Carolinian as well. Central Piedmont Community College, really, really well known. Amazing what all happened there. But how did the Museum of the Bible even get on your radar screen? Why are you sitting here today?
That's a great question. Well, my wife and I decided maybe it was time for me to retire. Mm. And so I've been a college president for 32 years, 24 years at Central Piedmont Community College, and 7 or 8 years before that with Pueblo Community College in Colorado. And we love Charlotte. And I thought, well, I'll write a few more books. I've got a couple I want to write and do some consulting, and we'd do some traveling. So much for man's plans. So anyway, I said the prayer that most of us do when we're in transition. You know, I said,
yeah.
Lord, let us know what you want us to do next. We're going to have some time on our hands. And that was a Saturday night. And Monday morning, I got called by an executive search official.
Wow.
And he says, Dr. Zeiss, he says, you don't know us, but we know a lot about you. And of course, I made the connection immediately.
Yeah.
And so anyway, he says, we want you to come up here. We're going to establish the world's first world-class museum to the Bible. And I'm intrigued and so on. And then he told me, I talked with him. Well, I said, look, is that a full-time job? he said, oh, yeah, yes, sir, it's a full-time job. I said, I don't think I can do that. I just agreed with my wife to retire and all that. And so he called back a couple of weeks later, or maybe a week later. He said, look, you're the one. We know you're the one. And he says, you don't know it yet. And I said, well, I know. But look, I said, I'll give you some names of some people who could probably do that job very well. And then they called back in 2 weeks, and they got me up here, and they got me interested.
Wow.
And then I brought my wife up, and she got interested. And on the way back on the airplane, I said, well, what'd you think, Beth? And she says, I think you asked, he answered, we have no choice.
Yeah, this
and
is so a done deal.
Here we are.
So
great,
did you know
exciting.
Much about the Museum of the Bible, Dr. Zeiss, before you actually came out here?
No, I didn't. But I did know Dr. Bob Cooley and another board member named Jim Moore, but particularly Dr. Cooley, who's brilliant and an expert on all things Bible. And so I did know about him, and I recalled that he said he was serving on a board of the Museum of the Bible, but it didn't click until later.
Yeah. So what was your reaction? I mean, I've been, and I don't often get speechless, but I've been pretty speechless today.
Oh, I tell people, you know, if you really want to see something marvelous, you come up and look at this museum. And of course, we'll be open on the 17th of November, but it is. And every day I'm finding out more and more and more about it. A lot of thinking has gone into it. We have 90 scholars that look at the content on every exhibit. So anything you see or you hear, a video, whatever it is, it's all as accurate as it can possibly be. These scholars are from around the world. They're Hebrew scholars, they're Catholic scholars, they're Protestant scholars, they're even atheists. We want to make sure that we are as accurate about the Bible and what it says as we possibly can be.
Yeah, and that's when we're going to talk to Nate Pennington later. He's an art director with Jonathan Martin Creative, and Jonathan Martin painted this incredible scope behind us, which is of the Sea of Galilee and looking out over the area where Jesus did most of his ministry. But he was talking about that, how they're not used to on a project like this where you've got scholars involved, you've got biblical history involved, you have the art side involved, you have the museum side involved, all for the cause of integrity and continuity and making sure this is done to the glory of God and accurately to the Word of God.
Yeah, absolutely right. And we want all people to become engaged with the Bible. In fact, that's right in our mission statement. You know, we really exist to get people engaged in the Bible. We are an innovative, global, and educational organization that does just that.
Well, you've been around a lot of organizations. You've been a lot of Fortune 500 companies. You've done everything that God allowed you to do at Central Piedmont Community College in North Carolina, which just exploded. How is this different for you, not only as a businessman and a leader, but as a Christian? How is this different for you from anything else God has called you to before?
Well, I think, you know, he gives us a lot of collective experiences, and they all culminate at some point, and then you sort of realize it's time to move from success to significance.
Wow.
And that's what it's done for me and my wife. I mean, it's just the opportunity. What a wonderful honor. And when you know that you're being used as his instrument, then it's really gratifying.
Yeah.
And so you work all that much harder. But this is going to set This is going to reach a lot of people. We're expecting from 1.6 to 5 million people. We don't know yet until they come in. But we want this. It is already emerging as sort of the center of all things Bible.
Yeah.
And we want all people. Doesn't matter where they're from, what their religion, or if they don't, or if they're not faithful. We want all of them to come. It's going to be entertaining, but certainly truthful and accurate, scholarly. It's a working museum because scholars will be working here. We have one demonstration lab where people can go and watch as they're translating cuneiforms.
Amazing.
Or papyrus or whatever it happens, Dead Sea Scrolls, whatever. So it's a working museum, and we're still adding to the body of knowledge of the history of the Bible, if you will, as we learn and transcribe some 40,000 biblical artifacts that we have.
Yeah.
So that's there. But we also have all sorts of entertainment things for young people, older people. My favorite is called the Flyboard.
Oh, Steve. Yeah. Bring it on.
And the Flyboard comes out of Austria. So I think it'll be the first one in the United States, or only one other, and I think it's in Austria. And 36 people get on a platform, and they hold on, and they stand, so they get a sense of flying.
Yeah.
And it will take you off down the National Mall, and you've got a screen around you, and air blows, so you get to it's moving like this, up and down, around. And we fly right down the mall to the Library of Congress, and you go right inside the Congress, and lasers shoot up at every place in the Library of Congress where there's scripture.
Yeah, it's all over the place.
It's all over. And then down to the National Archives building, it's all over that. Now to Lincoln Memorial, it's there. The idea is to let people know just how pervasive the word is in our culture.
It's in our culture. It's in our nation. It's in our nation's capital. It's embedded in the very way that this country came to exist in the first place, Declaration of Independence, Constitution of the United States. And if you wanted to get rid of the Bible's impact on Washington, D.C., you'd pretty much have to flatten the city. We're going to keep talking to Dr. Tony Zeitz on Facebook Live. And then when we come back after the commercial break, we'll talk to one of the artists that's working here live from the Museum of the Bible in Washington, D.C. Just absolutely mind-boggling. This is Steve Noble. We'll be right back.
What will make a man so bold? Make a woman lay her own life down. Only one thing, Jesus Christ magnified.
Welcome back to Call to Action Radio. This is Steve Noble, also live on Facebook, facebook.com/C2A Radio, and our friends at the Museum of the Bible, kind enough to share the broadcast today, the Facebook Live broadcast, onto their Facebook page, facebook.com/museum of the Bible, and of course the website museumofthebible.org, and just continuing to be blown away with every moment that I'm here today. And it's under construction. We got another 7 months and then this place will open. It can I was talking to Shannon earlier today, who's on staff here at the museum. 5,000 people at any given time can be in this building, and I'm telling you, I expect that God's going to blow the doors off this thing. And whether you're a believer, a mediocre believer, a new believer, a non-believer, a skeptic, an atheist, a Jewish, agnostic, orthodox, whatever, this is going to speak volumes to people in a loving and kind and compassionate, engaging and highly professional way that I think it's just going to be amazing to watch God work. But somebody that's been involved in this process really coming up on 3 to 4 years now is Nate Pennington. He's an art director with Jonathan Martin Creative. So if you're looking on Facebook Live, this painting behind us, which is of the Sea of Galilee, hand painted, what, Nate, like last week?
Literally last week.
And who did it?
Jonathan Martin.
And so tell us about Jonathan Martin. I mean, the organization itself, Creative. Pull that mic in a little bit closer to your mouth and we'll be good to go.
Is that better?
Yeah, that's good.
Okay. Jonathan is a brilliant, gifted, talented person. It's a privilege and an honor to be part of his team. And his excellence and integrity shows through everything that he does. I've been with John for almost 10 years now, and I've been privileged to see his excellence and purpose-driven life just manifest in this project.
Yeah.
This totally has gotten us excited as a company. We've been able to take years of experience and pull it all together, and a great team of people, and it's just been fun, honestly.
Oh,
and
exciting. Fun, but a long road. And so how did you get involved in all this? What's kind of your artistic background, and then things that Jonathan Martin Creative has done, and then what's it like for you to bring all of your own personal experience, your faith? You come from a family that did a lot of evangelism, and kind of that personal impact on you. But just Jonathan Martin Creative in general, and then your path to land you here at the Museum of the Bible.
That's actually what attracted me to Jonathan in the first place. I was raised in the ministry, and to be able to do art in a field where it's used for so many different things, and to be able to use it to bring people closer to God, which is John's heart, is to minister to people, and that shows in everything that we've done. That's what attracted me to work with John, and it's been a privilege. And the faith-building experience of being on this project in particular has been mind-blowing.
Okay, so what do you mean by that, the faith-building experience for you personally?
When I first heard about the project, to be real honest, I thought it was cool, but I had no idea what kind of impact it'd have on me personally. Uh-huh. But Jesus, when he was teaching, he used everyday illustrations from their life. And as, you know, being raised in a Western culture, modern Western culture, a lot of that I drove right by.
Yeah.
Jesus was a supreme communicator, and he taught pulling from everyday experiences, everyday objects that the people related with. It was not highbrow. It wasn't complicated. And as we've worked through the exhibit, the parables of Jesus have literally taken on an entire new level of meaning.
Yeah, you mentioned that earlier when we were talking before the show, and around the corner here, there's an olive press.
Yes.
And you mentioned something about the millstone.
Oh, yeah, we're working with an amazing team of archaeologists and historians and Bible scholars. It's just been a privilege to work with these great men and women of faith. And not all of them are believers,
yeah.
But all of them are experts in their field. So we're working off dimensions and creating this olive mill. And I stepped back. We're in our shop, and I stepped back, and I looked at this olive mill, and I was like, good grief. This thing is huge. And then I remembered where Jesus said, hey, it'd be better for you to have one of these things hung around your neck and be tossed in the ocean than to offend a little one. I was like, wow, God really cares about not offending children.
Because the millstone is massive.
It's massive. I mean, little things like that just change your perspective.
Yeah, you also mentioned earlier, I wanted to ask you about this, because we're here in the Nazareth set, and so you've got like what kind of a hut, kind of a home you would have found.
Oh, yeah.
And then so Jesus is teaching in one of these places, and we hear, oh, yeah, four guys lowered their buddy through the roof,
right.
Through the thatch, like right. It's one of those cheap thatch curtains that you put over your
almost,
window.
Yeah.
But that's not what we see
no,
in here.
No, it's not at all. One of the amazing experiences as you come through this exhibit is the attention to realism and detail and first century building processes. And the roofs that they used were not what I had imagined. And as we've built them, I mean, we're talking about a serious construction project to lower their friend down to Jesus. We have debris falling. We're talking 12 to 14 inches of cement and organic material.
So the roof is that
roof,
thick.
The roof is a slab. And so once again, that parable that I grew up hearing as a child completely took on a new level. They were so intent on getting their friend to Jesus, they were willing to do anything. And then, of course, they're going to have to repair the thing. And it's not just throwing a tarp over it.
Yeah.
So, I mean, their dedication, and once it just is amazing.
Yeah.
It will change the way you read the teachings of Jesus.
Yeah. And that's been happening to me. I was talking to Steve Green about it a few weeks ago, like I mentioned. And that's the thing that for a lot of people, unfortunately, I think this will be the closest they get to getting to Jerusalem and getting to Israel. But all of a sudden, the Bible, instead of being something that I think quite often can be just a book that we study, And we're so used to it, just like the story of the millstone and story of the four men lowering their friend through the roof. But you come walking into this Nazareth exhibit, and everything starts to take a new depth.
It does.
A whole new experience of the Bible, which, of course, is one of the main themes of the Museum of the Bible. But tell us what we're looking at in here, because I was walking through earlier with Shannon, and I was asking some of the artists that were working on a tree, just one tree,
yes,
patterned out of the olive trees in the Garden of Gethsemane. How intense is it in here? Just to see what we're seeing.
It's you are looking at literally over 3 years worth of work between design and fabrication, research, on site in Israel. It's been hundreds and thousands of man hours to recreate this experience, which you're right. It's going to give an opportunity to people who may never have the opportunity to go to Israel to be able to experience it. And it's not just the sights. It's the sounds. It's three-dimensional sound. You get to touch it. You get to feel it. You're there.
And then there's going to be people, period. Like
correct.
These people in here.
That's right. We have docents, and they're going to be able to interact with the guests and answer questions and explain what life was like in that first century, what the world was like that Jesus grew up in.
Yeah, and then so everything that's here in the Nazareth exhibit, take us kind of through what all we're going to see when the Museum of the Bible opens in November.
As the museum opens, when they first enter into the exhibit, they're going to enter into a fairly traditional museum setting, and it'll kind of set the table to what you're about to experience. You'll understand where in history you fall as you come into Nazareth Village, the complete immersive experience. They'll come through that, and there's a couple theaters that will be available and have some more detailed history and contextual information being given there. And then you walk into Nazareth Village, and you're stepping back in time.
Yeah.
And you'll be able to experience what a typical house is like, what their cooking courtyard is like, what the animal courtyard, what the village center was like, and the synagogue, which I always thought was just the church, but you find out the rich historical meaning behind a synagogue and how that was a center of town life.
Yeah,
You'll be able to see a house under construction, so you'll be able to understand how did this first century construction take place.
Wow.
An olive mill. And then it ends in a beautiful just a place to just reflect on everything that you've just taken in. And the mural that's behind us.
Yeah.
This is a rest and reflection area, and it's not done yet, but it's looking gorgeous. And you'll have this opportunity just to absorb everything, being surrounded with the sounds of Nazareth.
Well, I was talking to Dr. Zeiss earlier, who, of course, the executive director of the Museum of the Bible, and he was talking about we kind of fell onto the word cohesive.
Yes.
The cohesiveness of everybody involved with the museum and the staff and the artists. And you talked about biblical scholars and experts and people that, you know, there's Jewish scholars involved. There's Protestant scholars involved, Catholic scholars. You've got Orthodox. For you personally as a Christian and somebody that kind of grew up around the ministry, how has this impacted your faith just seeing God pull all this stuff together in this unique way?
It's built my faith like none other. The thing that you cannot walk away from this museum, especially as somebody who was raised, I joke, you know, I went to church 9 months before I was ever born. I never didn't believe in God.
Right, yeah.
But as that person, as that guy, I walked away from this experience, and I don't think that you can miss it. The truthfulness and the accuracy of Scripture and the amazing thing that God has done in preserving this truth year after year after year, generation after generation. And it's backed up by history, and it's truth, and it's amazing.
Yeah.
And it really is for anyone.
Yeah.
I have friends that are not of faith, and I'm excited to be able to invite them here
and just watch their interaction.
Yes.
With the most important, most profound, most impactful book in the history of mankind, the history of the universe, and it's going to be so cool to watch it. It'll be cool for me, but exceptionally cool for you because you're in here working on it. What a huge blessing. Nate, thanks so much for being with us today.
You.
Just beautiful work, a great blessing to all of us. I know it's going to bless everybody that gets up here, which is all of you, right? This is Steve Noble. We'll be right back. Back at Steve Noble. It's Call to Action Radio, coming to you live from the Museum of the Bible, which, hold your horses, you can't come yet, okay, but soon. I've heard about 7 months, slightly less than 7 months away, November 17th here in Washington, D.C. Yes, you heard that right here in our nation's capital, literally 3 blocks away from the Capitol building. Over, you know, you go over, you just drive, you're looking around for something to park, and there's the Smithsonian, there's the Capitol building, you look down the mall, there's the Washington Monument, and it's right here in Washington, D.C., what used to be part of the Small Business Administration building. And the Hobby Lobby family, the Green family, came along and back in, I think, about 2009 started. They were helping some other folks pick up biblical antiquities, and it just kind of went from there, and God obviously had another plan. And so here we are, 430,000 square feet. I've mentioned this before. I've seen all this stuff online. I've been studying the Museum of the Bible. I've been to the Passages exhibit, which is kind of a really, really small representation of the collection that traveled around the country. It was in Charlotte, North Carolina. I did my show from there, but that was probably 5 years ago. None of it prepared me for what I've experienced here today. I do want to give a couple of shout-outs, because you don't just show up and come walk walking around. So Steve Green first, the chairman of the board and the president of Hobby Lobby, spent 30 minutes with him in an interview down at the Museum of the Bible exhibit at the National Religious Broadcasters Convention. And then he got me connected with Shannon Bennett, who's the director of community relations and events here at the Museum of the Bible. And then Danielle Smith, who, don't tell anybody, that's Steve Green's daughter. Okay, so Danielle helped me out, and so here we are. It's been a huge blessing. And then reconnect with another person, not only from the Raleigh-Durham area, but also from Southeastern Baptist Theological Seminary, Dr. Seth Pollinger, the assistant director of the collection here at the Museum of the Bible. Seth, how are you, man?
I'm good. We're 9 months away.
Oh, my goodness.
I think people are going to have more trouble finding parking than you than you told them just a minute ago. But
yes.
It'll be a spectacular place, so I'm sure it's worth the walk, whatever they have to park.
Oh, my goodness, just mind-boggling. And, yeah, it's worth the drive. It's worth the flight. It's worth the walk. It's worth the parking. I really was, like I said, I wasn't prepared for exactly what I've experienced today, but, man, God is doing an awesome thing here. So how did you get involved? You've got a Ph.D., biblical interpretation from Southeastern. You're a well-educated guy. How did you end up at a museum in D.C.?
Well, I was back in Raleigh and was working with a real estate firm, and we were considering teaching opportunities, and that was after we had finished a Ph.D. in biblical interpretation. And somebody sent me an article from the paper, from the Washington Post, and it had some quotes from people, including Steve Green, and he was talking about this vision he had for interactive education. They wanted to build a place where the public could come, wouldn't necessarily be a threatening place of where you're going to be forced to believe something, understand something,
right.
Walk away with anything specific, but it was a place where people could interact. And honestly, that's the teaching kind of environment that I love, where people can, listen, weigh what they think, interact with it, and, decide, what they want to do as they walk out. And so that model of education was very attractive. And so I started looking into more articles in the newspaper. And the more I read about it, the more I thought, well, this is a challenge that would be fun to get involved with.
Yeah. Yeah. Were you, in terms of the size of the collection, the Green Family Collection of Biblical Antiquities, which is over 40,000 pieces, were you ready, or how did you react to just the overall scope of all this? The collection itself, of course, which is massive, but then the museum too. And then your part in all of it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, the museum has exhibits, and the exhibits oftentimes are either built around narratives, so you're unfolding a story, using different innovative, technological, creative ways of presenting that story. And then it also involves artifacts. And so sometimes you are intensive with artifacts, and, you want to invite people in to look deeply at it. I mean, this is an ancient piece of history. It's kind of our access to the past. The real people maybe made this, this pot or this.
Yeah.
Somebody was carrying this coin in, whatever they had that was like a pocket. So I think it's always intriguing to look at artifacts and to think about what was life like. In addition to that, I mean, even Bibles, Bibles that were manuscripts written by hand.
Yeah.
We have some that are from, say, the 3rd century. And when you look at this, what looks like a scrap and looks like a fragment, it's all we have is a fragment. I'm thinking of one that was actually found in a trash heap, an ancient
Wow.
trash dump. What is this and why should I even care? And if you saw it on just in a case, behind glass or something, you wouldn't make any connection to it. But when you look at it and understand more about it, you can see that although we have just a fragment, if you were to put this all together, you would tell that this is actually from a page from the Gospel of John.
Yeah.
And based on the page numbers on the fragment, you can actually trace back that this was a copy of the Gospel of John that traveled by itself. In other words, it wasn't, attached to Luke, for example. We have other, manuscripts where Luke was, combined with John. But then you take it a step further, and by looking at the lettering in it, the wording, how they wrote their letters, you can tell that this was a book that was meant to be read in a group,
wow,
in public. And so you can make that connection of we found this in Egypt. There was a community of people sitting around reading this book in the third century, Gospel of John. And, I mean, obviously it had to be copied from somewhere. It came from somewhere else. And so this was an important book for a community. It had spread down there from another country. There were people passing it. And so I love to visualize,
yeah,
that. I mean, you visualize the real people involved because this is the history of the Bible. You know, as it's moved as an important document, as a treasured document, as a sacred document to many people, and as it circulates around the world. So from that angle, it's been a lot of fun to, yeah, be able to look and to study and at these artifacts and to be able to kind of put yourself in their shoes. But at the same time, it's about even more than just an artifact. It's oftentimes about the bigger story, you know, of this as it moves around.
Absolutely. Well, we talked about this earlier, but two things I want to make sure we touch on. Number one, kind of like Nate was on earlier from Jonathan Martin, and he was talking about this is the highest level of scrutiny of anything they've ever done on the creative, mm-hmm, side, because you've got scholars, you've got biblical antiquity, you have actual things that you have to match. And how important is it to get this accurate? And then after that, I also want to ask you, Seth, the kind of the overall goals here. Mm-hmm. What are we trying to accomplish? What are we praying, mm-hmm, for? What are we hoping for, mm-hmm, with what God does with the Museum of the Bible?
You know, there's accuracy, but you know, there's a lot of things we don't know. I mean, you're looking at a fragment from the third century. We can deduce based on the lettering that this is from a community. You can imagine that, but there's so much about the community we don't know. We don't know what was in their bigger scope of thoughts at the time, yeah, or their challenges specifically. We know this fragment ended up in a trash heap, but was important at some point. So I think it's fun to explore the extent to which we can know. And then there's things that we can't know. So accuracy is part of accuracy is let's state what we can know. Let's stay away from what we can't know. But there's still a lot of, important things to learn. And then as you do that for different artifacts and as you do that for the bigger story, yeah, that comes together, you see more of the dimension, you see more of the texture. And I think that's enriching. And that's, it's a big part of, I think, when you put an exhibit together, you know, it's not based on one piece, but you're putting a lot of pieces,
right,
together.
Well, you're pulling together this whole story, and that's why, you know, the three main floors here, the narrative floor, the history floor, and the impact floor. And then all of a sudden, I mean, for me as a believer, the first time I saw a passage exhibit, I saw P90, which was like one of the oldest fragments we have. I had studied in class at the seminary, and all of a sudden there it was. And you go, okay, the actual manuscript evidence to back up our modern-day Bible is overwhelming compared to the rest of antiquities and anything that we look at from the past. Nobody questions Caesar's Gallic Wars, but there's been a war against the Bible because this is the one book on the planet that comes with all kinds of consequences, mm-hmm, if it, in fact, it is true, which we know that it is. But in terms of the overall impact of the museum and what you've been involved in here, and for people coming, believers, non-believers, nominal believers, Protestants, Catholics, Jewish people, agnostic, atheists, what are your hopes, Seth, for what God's going to do here?
Mm-hmm. Well, we want to raise questions, and that it's actually much more true than even give answers. We want people to come in and have a hunger to learn more. Mm. This is a place where they can have, you know, new imaginations. You mentioned our history floor. I mean, we want them to see evidence that stirs them and say, you know, I had no idea. You know, I didn't realize that the Gospels circulated and were sacred, you know, in among so many people. And at the same time, I didn't realize that there were these other books that the early Christians were reading too. Now, what do I do with that? Well, that's a question, and that's great. You know, I think we want to stir questions. We want people to see things from different angles, yeah, than they saw before. On the narrative floor, I mentioned new imaginations. I mean, we want people to walk in, and what they thought was so familiar becomes unfamiliar. Mm. And I didn't think about it that way. That's different. You know, and at the same time, you know, what's familiar or what's unfamiliar becomes familiar.
Yeah, yeah. And what about the impact floor, real quick? We got about a minute.
Yeah, the impact floor. We want people to walk in and say, wow, I've seen, I've heard that song, I've seen that movie, I've seen I've run across that, you know, discussion in government, but I didn't realize the Bible was there.
Yeah.
You know, and so they see that the Bible's been part of the discussion, and people are oftentimes appealing to it, arguing for different positions. But the Bible's always central. I mean, in the sense that a lot of people appeal to it, and it's an important part of the discussion.
Yeah, that's right. And I think some four words that we're going to hear a lot here at the Museum of the Bible, I had no idea. I had no idea. It's going to blow everybody away. Dr. Seth Pollinger, thanks for being here today, buddy.
Thanks.
You're very welcome. Okay, friends, live from the Museum of the Bible, opening November 17th. Go to museumofthebible.org, and God willing, I'll talk to you again real soon.